처음인가?
처음.
Then you say, can I ask a question? It is about in this practice I found, you know, my mind get you know, after sitting for a while, it get like stilled, you know, very calm and all. And after a while, you know, if like it's continuing, you know, for a long time. And then, like, you know, suddenly a thought comes.
Yes.
And then I am aware of the thought. And then, you know, if that thought goes with another thought related to that subject,
mm-hmm.
maybe if it is a food, you know,
yes.
something related to another food,
yes.
okay. and then another one comes.
Okay.
It's like a flood.
Mm.
And then I see it going. And this is not only today food or yesterday food. Maybe it's food I have consumed.
But, I'm not going to do it.
Yeah, when I am aware of it, some more food thoughts.
So if you are interested in the subject of the thought, then your mind will think of the subject a bit more. So you need to recognize the functioning of the mind. Mind is thinking and not sort of get into the subject of the thought.
Do you want it? Like then I have to think. This is not interested to me or something like that?
No,
oh.
not like that. Just know, mind is happening.
Another yogi was sitting meditation.
Had a thought about something and continued thinking about that subject and didn't stop being aware, was aware, the mind was thinking about this. Finished the sitting session and went to do a walking meditation and the mind stopped thinking about the subject. Then the yogi came back for a sitting session and then the thought continued from where it ended. So it shows that, you know, the mind is interested in the subject matter of the wants to think about. When the mind thinks continuously and we're aware of it, he says then it's not enough to just know the mind is thinking. So we have to see the intention to think. The mind wants to think. The desire to think is also there.
Yeah,
only when the desire to think is less, the thinking will become less. So now you see the subject matter may be food, and it keeps coming, but you don't recognize that within the mind it wants to. It likes this and wants to keep generating.
Yeah.
Sometimes if we ask ourselves, why is the mind thinking so much? Then we might detect the sense of desire to think. He says another yogi was watching her mind thinking and asked herself that question, why is the mind thinking so much? And then she realized because it wants to entertain itself. So once we know the cause, usually that sort of He says, so when we look at thoughts, you know, we can understand things surrounding it. For example, cause and effect,
right or wrong, good or bad.
If you realize something about it, that increases your wisdom around that.
So
it doesn't matter that there's thinking. There can be thought, but what can we understand about it? What can we understand about what's happening?
Can you take that logic a little bit further? You know, once you say, well, okay, there's a desire to think, and that is because it's easier to think than it is to just be aware of not thinking, or just aware of a space or whatever, something less demanding. For example, ask our daughter to follow this train of logic. I mean, it's not enough to say, well, it's less demanding. It's less demanding because, you know. It's easier to think. Mm-hmm. In this case, what you're saying is the train of thought takes you to, there's a desire to think because that's easier to do than whatever you were doing before. Mm. Or it's more pleasurable or something. Mm-hmm. Because now that kind of awareness, is it enough to do that?
Mm.
You know, just keep because-ing.
Yeah, because-ing.
Mm. And then you're getting into thinking, so...
Mm.
You know, there's a kind of end point. I get what Sayadaw is saying there, but there's also a point where that's not a satisfying enough answer sometimes. You know, there's more desire there to think.
Okay,
why is there more desire to think? You know, you see what I'm getting at?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you don't want to be thinking too much because that's not the point.
It's thinking about thinking. He says sometimes, you know, it's hard to explain understanding. Sometimes the understanding just hits you, you know, and it might encompass a lot of understanding about a large chain of because's. Or it might just be one little bit of because, or just understanding nature of what's happening. But if you understand it, that moment of understanding sort of seems to overtake everything else.
It will come,
It's like being mindful when we speak. You know, if we are truly mindful when we speak, then over time, we can't help but begin to realize when it's enough, or when we should speak, what we should say, what we should not say.
So experience will tell you that.
That's a kind of wisdom in Pali. It's called sampajanya.
To
comprehension.
Can I just throw an observation? I was walking meditation this morning and I had a small anxiety,
mm-hmm.
a little one. And I worked it back, for whatever.
Yes.
But then the thought came to me that, because it had been, you know, lots of thinking the previous day, but, waiting. It's a bit like when Sayadaw talked about the nose and the smelling. You know, he went around, running around saying, ah, the nose smells.
Yes.
There was this aha experience this morning of, if you just wait, these feelings will come. And then, anyway, it was just an aha moment. So I'm just, that it was a bit of an insight, I suppose, if you like. I wouldn't like to glorify it that much, but... But this idea of waiting suddenly, I mean, you can read in a book, wait, wait, your patience.
Yes.
But when you smell the soap, you know, then you suddenly realize, ah, that's what waiting is.
Mm.
He
says, you know, gold, whether it's a little speck of gold or a large block of gold.
Small gold, lots of gold, big gold, lots of gold.
His teacher used to say to him, if you get a speck or two a day, it's fine. And sometimes we say, oh, even the speck or two is difficult. He said, yeah, but yeah, just that, it's enough. And then initially, if we're not skillful, of course, we can't get too much.
I was glad I wasn't greedy about it.
In meditation, there is no luck. One monk asked him, he said, so long as you like put in hard work and you just meditate, won't you just like hit Nibbana one day? And I said, no. He said, you don't get to Nibbana by accident. You must come together. And then, when the conditions are complete, the right effect will happen.
Cause and effect, yeah.
Nature is so fair. Only when you reach the level you need to, you will get what you get from that level.
Can you even have all the defilements in one go? All the defilements in one go. Something hit a button for
you
me.
Mean like moha, lobha, dosa, moha.
Yeah. And then sort of it was confusing for me, but then working back on it, it actually had all the elements. They usually get separated in when we read, when I'm reading.
Experientially, yes. It can feel like you know everything. Theoretically, they say that the delusion can arise with the anger or the aversion at any one time. But experientially, because it all happens at once, you know, you can be angry and wanting to be more angry, which is the greed, and things like that, you know. So yes, you can experience all three.
And then get confused. Trying to be something, trying to feel something different.
He says the farmers tend to come like they're like gangsters, he says.
It felt like
being besieged.
Yes.
Yeah.
he says when there's attachment, you know, there's the fear of losing what you're attached to, you know, that's the loba and the dosa again. Fear is dosa.
The other day I was mentioning about the aches and pains, and I was having anxiety and fear and all that. Mm. So after that, after Seattle gave some instruction, then I separated the body from the mind, and I felt better, more relaxed, and then all of a sudden, my heart was pumping. Mm. I don't know why, where did that come from? So I just let it go. And then last night when I went back to sleep, I was actually getting to sleep, and suddenly my heart started pumping again. So I thought that maybe it's because I separate the body from the mind, and the fear also got separated. So, but maybe because of a momentum, it's still appearing.
What is that?
So, the pumping of the heart.
Pumping,
the
fear. You tell me that, huh? I'm going to do it cold, you know.
When your heart started thumping, is it just because you became aware of the thumping of the heart, or did you feel fear at the same time?
No.
No fear,
no,
right?
Just thumping for a few seconds.
And then it subsided.
Yeah, and then it just stopped by itself. So I thought maybe when I separated the mind from the body, this also got loose.
you can't actually separate the mind from the body in that
I
sense.
Mean,
it's not like physically.
It sounds like a supraventricular tachycardia.
He says it sounds more like you just noticed that the heart was thumping. Our heart is thumping all the time. You know,
our heart is like pumping quite hard just for a few seconds, and then it was okay. It's like as if you have a fear, and then it's thump, thump, thump.
Just a little bit. I'm top. If you don't know what you were thinking, then it's not possible to know whether your question whether you're separating your mind from the body caused this is a very strange question.
I mean, like, I was having bodily aches, so I separate that from being anxious and thinking about it. So I thought maybe when I
separate only means that you're watching it separately. You are
object.
Yes, as an object, you know the mind is different from the body.
Because previously I used to, so when aches and pains arise, I ignore it and just kept on sitting until it's quite painful, then I change my posture.
Yeah.
But now I can feel, one spot is like a current, and then it went off, and then another spot came up again. And then went off. And then another spot. It's all different spots.
Yeah,
that's
good. You know, yeah. You can go and bake through it. And it's your problem.
But
solid is not good.
Yes. In reality, pain is not solid. Pain is, many different sensations together. But wait, Kwe Pyo Rao is in the nephew of to Siku Kwevi Tiro to poor relax Pidelli.
Hm. Siku Tiro, Nayanis, and the chat, Naku, the Baba, Naku Kwe, Kwema. To Nalela, Nayo, Nayo, Nasiku, I the Baba Naku Nalela, Kwema.
So,
have you met you and Nalela, Kwela, or what? Nane Kwele, so you to jump.
Ah, okay.
Nane Kwela to jump, you put it to the one who's shooting, I don't want to do it to the two names.
Okay, so he said, when you say separating the mind and the body, he says, in fact, the mind is just recognizing that they're different natures. They are two different objects, body, and there's sensation in the body, which is interpreted as pain, and there is mind, and the mind has reaction towards the pain, which is like anxiety and so on, fear. Or knowing, yeah. So you see the different, that they are two different natures. This is the mind bit, mm-hmm. and this is the body bit, right? Mm-hmm. So that is the separation, understanding that there is a difference in the nature of mind and body.
Right.
Yes? But this is what you're calling a separation, because yeah. you're seeing its different nature. Mm-hmm. But he said if the mind accidentally interprets this as separating it from me, well, there's no me in fact, right? He says then that might bring the sense of like fear you mentioned about it. Is it because the mind is afraid that the heart started thumping, you know?
I wasn't thinking about it.
You wondered whether that was a and if you don't recognize what thought it is that, you know, I mean, if you don't recognize that there was fear in the mind or something like that, there's just the heart thumping. He said, then just know that the heart was thumping, that's all. There's nothing associated in the mind with it as far as you could see.
Okay.
That time. So you just say, this is happening, that's all. Ventricular tachycardia. Ventricular. That means in the heart, right?
Yeah. Yeah. So, did you feel short of breath? Did you feel?
No.
How long did it last?
Only a few seconds.
Not ventricular
tachycardia. Yeah,
that's what it
is. That's what it is. That's what it is. That's what it is. That's what it is. That's what it is. That's what it is. That's what it is. That's what it is. That's what
it
is. That's what it is. That's what it is. That's what it is.
That's what it is. That's what it is. Hear the heartbeat.
Anyone get
and then was worried that he was getting a heart disease or something. Actually, it's just that when you're quiet, you can hear it very clearly.
I don't think it's a medical condition.
I was having
fear, and sometimes my heart do thump, and I'm having quite a lot of pain. Yeah. So now that I seem to be able to relax and
yes.
feel a bit better.
Yes.
But suddenly this pumping comes up. So I thought maybe the body is one thing and the mind is another thing.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe by thinking that way, the beating of the heart also became separated. So
when something arises, just know this is happening. The mind is thinking, you know, the mind is knowing. Just recognize it.
My mind was opening floodgate upon floodgate, like Sugarma was saying, until I just stopped and said, why am I allowing this to happen? Why am I doing this to myself? And once I, you know, realized that, I saw that I'm allowing it to happen. So now I don't allow it to get caught to that, catch it and say, okay, that's in the past, not relevant now, I'm just feeding these things. And why am I doing it to myself? I'm making myself suffer.
Mm-hmm. ပြောရတယ်ဘာလို့တော့မလာလဲတကယ်တမ်းသူကအဲ့ရတွေ့ရဖြစ်ခွင့်ပေးထားတာအဲ့ဒါကြီးအတိတ်မှာတကယ်တမ်းအခုမဆိုင်တော့ဘာလို့ကိုကိုတို့ခပေးနေတာလဲဆိုတော့
နားလည်ပြီးတော့ကြောက
် If the mind understands then yes it can
naturally must stop
then it will naturally stop
ဒါနဲ့ပတ်သက်လို့အတိတ်တခုဝင်လာလို့ရည်ကြီး
Yeah it's we need is for some understanding to arise.
We kind of enjoy it, we kind of in a masochistic way sometimes, going over it and over it and feeling sorry for yourself sometimes and being addicted.
So it's like giving, paying money to go and cry in the cinema. not knowing that this is dukkha, we want to feel to do things.
This afternoon I was looking at the quality of the awareness and there was some which pleased me, but I found it to be like a little bit lazy, a little bit sluggish, like work to rule, I'm on the job but only just. The awareness was there but didn't really want to be there. Should I just accept that or is there a way of energizing?
今天都得有劲呢，那那个是嘞，是得老多都来看嘞，都冇讲嘞。像那世界，你来呀，对吧？没弄着，太慢，你闹。那都在前面都对你。你不能别。我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我，我， What's the attitude towards the practice? Does the mind understand how to be aware? You know, what is it doing? The Buddha said, when the mind is in a good state, no, it's in a good state. When the mind is in a bad state, no, it's in a bad state. So he didn't say try to change the state. He said recognize the state. So we're not trying to control the experience or change the
experience.
We're just trying to know the experience. But mostly if we judge it, we say this is not a good state, then we want to change it. Then dosa is there.
I thought it was a good state compared to another way.
Right attitude. If we want only what is good and we don't want anything, you know, bad in our experience, it's not really fair, is it? That's a defilement, you know, wanting only what
we want.
Grasp what we think is good, we push away what we think is not good. When we see that something is not good, don't push
it
away.
It's not good, but the mind is not angry. Should be like this.
Normally, he says the mind just immediately pushes away what it finds not good.
So this is an opportunity to learn acceptance.
Right.
Some of us, he says, can't accept anything. We can't accept it when the mind is grasping. We don't want the mind to grasp. We can't accept it when the mind is aversive. We don't want the mind to be aversive. Yeah, his teacher used to say, do not grasp and do not push away. And he couldn't understand it at that age. He said, because in his experience, the mind either liked something or didn't like something. He couldn't think of anything in between. When he understood more, then he realized that it's possible to understand what's going on and remain neutral. understanding is pleasant or unpleasant. Then he understood that it's the middle way that allows us to be
new. Grasping
is one extreme, resistance is the other extreme. How do we walk the center line? So that's only wisdom. Wisdom knows what is pleasant, what is not pleasant, and does not resist or attach. And it knows both, but is able to remain in the center.
Would you like to say and ask something?
Yes.
First of all, I want to express my appreciation for Seven's teachings. It's very beautiful to see Namya and Ajahn Brahma's as our teacher.
Yeah.
And there are quite things that are in common, particularly teaching about the attitude towards meditation. And 2 days ago we were talking about good objects, bad objects that are actually more good objects than bad objects in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And this kind of acceptance, whatever comes up. And yeah, I would like to ask Salome to explain a little bit more about the attitude towards the meditation, because it seems to be much more crucial than the technique itself. It seems to be the attitude we have towards the meditation, towards the This is one part of the question.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'll make a second part.
Mm-hmm.
No, maybe you can ask him that.
Okay. The attitude he says, whether you want to call it the attitude towards practice or the attitude in the practice. The attitude in within the practice, he says, needs to be, you know, again, without the desiring of something, desiring of a result, without the aversion of the process, aversion towards the process that has to be passed through, without delusion about the necessary process that has to be gone through, you know, that sort of thing. So. Everything that you know that is explained in that Seattle explains is a little bit of information that is supposed to help us to have the right attitude when we are meditating, you know, within the practice, whether it is reminding us to not have greed, aversion, and so on, or, you know, just explaining what the how, you know, we're not, the practice doesn't have to be a certain way or another way. So, you know, all the specific details that he goes into, all that can at any time remind us of what is happening is natural. That, you know, there's no need to change the experience, there's no need to control the experience, that it's happening as it is, you know, that this is just cause and effect, there's no doer, and stuff like that. All that is supposed to help, yeah. Very often we think of thinking as papancha, you know, this is a defilement, we should not be doing this while meditating, but then that becomes worse. Yeah,
so. Information, knowledge is bigger.
So all the information feeds into the wisdom we can bring to the practice so that the right attitude can be held within
the practice.
His teacher always says, don't try to make things happen, don't try to do anything, and don't try to prevent anything. So, that was good. That, you know, when Sarah says don't do anything to it and don't try to prevent it, he's talking about the object, the experience. But there is the working, right? The being aware. We have to work at it. We have to work to be aware, remain aware, but we mustn't use the awareness to try to change the experience. Actually, his teacher's instruction is complete. It's a three-liner. It's don't try to do anything, don't try to prevent anything, but don't forget what is happening. And forget that.
So, the time is watching acknowledge Peter, but in some way, which is a man look.
Yeah, so when instructions are given, we must also make sure we understand it the right way.
I find it very helpful when I get in a difficult situation where I know that I kind of get into the papancha and lost mindfulness and those difficult emotions coming up.
Yeah.
I just determine how I look at my mind. And I kind of turn, but this is a kind of focusing, isn't it? But it seems necessary, it seems very helpful.
That's skillful means. So, Pyora, the Kali, Sika, Twiri, Nyala, Miswain, Po, Twiri, Makua, Po, Po, Kakerari, Twala, Miswain, Dua, Tuku, the Dibi, Seko, Bechime. So bro, I own you there. Damn it, damn it. Then I focus low. Damn it, damn it. Low at the low. When necessary, use every weapon you have in your arsenal.
I think it's good to make a kind of distinction, kind of chikana vasana, dhamma vasana, or just what fits the situation, what comes up naturally.
Yeah, two of your own. He says, in fact, you know, the all the four foundations, he says we must be skillful at understanding all of them. And it's when we understand the first three that is dhammanupassana. So when we know that
But if the mind inclines towards a certain object or towards a certain practice, kind of some people like to look at the mind, some people like to observe the body.
Yes.
Just put the inclinations out.
Yeah.
Should be best.
Eventually, from the standpoint of the mind, he says you will recognize everything because the mind knows body, the mind knows Vedana, the mind knows mind. So, eventually. Initially, of course, there is always the learning about each bit. So, you know, we might find ourselves focused more on the body, focused more on the feelings, focused more on the mind. And once we understand cause and effect and so on, we're looking at relationships, understanding relationships. That's the Dhammanupassana as well.
I remember 3 months ago, I read in the book, it's very beautiful, is that don't look at the object, just look at the object, like from the corner of your eye, look at the mind, how the mind reacts to the object.
This looking out of the corner of the eye, you know, it denotes how, in fact, we've already seen the object. It's already seen. Because the tendency of the yogi is when something is already seen, then we want to turn and look at it. We want to focus on it, but it's already seen. He says when the mind is just, when you're looking at the workings of the mind, and the mind is just in this receiving state, then all the objects that are matched with this mind are known. Yes? Either just like that, like from the corner of the eye and so on. And he says at that time when the yogi sort of turns and pays attention to the object, sometimes it's like too much effort to see, and then sometimes it feels like the object disappears because it's gone, the frequency is not matched anymore, then it doesn't see the object. It's like tuning your spectacles, you know, when you go to the spectacle shop and they put in the different degrees, and then when they put in too much as well, it becomes blur. When it's not enough, it's also blur. So, but when it's the right degree, right frequency, then you just see clearly. He says, so when the mind is working naturally, then, you know, usually the right frequency is there, and then sometimes we put in our personal, like, we want to see it more. Perhaps a little bit of greed, thinking we can see it more clearly, and then the balance can sometimes go off.
No.
When is it a papancha situation and an investigation situation? Sometimes, you know, like you think you're investigating whatever is going on, then it became like a papancha situation. So sometimes, you know.
Yes, when there's not enough wisdom, it can become papancha. Like you said, when we go into the because of, we're just thinking about it, that's the papancha. There was somebody who had a lot of depression, and tried a lot of ways to work with the depression. One of the ways was to ask
ask the question, why is the mind depression?
So one of the ways she used was to ask the question, you know, what, why is the mind depressed? The first time she heard of this way of doing it, you know, she tried it very simply and it worked. She actually got an answer, and for a while she was free of her depression. Subsequently, when she became depressed again, she tried to use it. Now she had an expectation. She thought, if I ask the question, I'm going to get the answer, and then I'm going to be free. And then it didn't work, and you know, it just wound her up. All sorts of wrong answers came up.
Is sometimes very tricky to find the way meditations works.
Next time we
make a system or something.
Yes. He says it's because we don't understand all the cause effect relationships in the first learning. He says, and then we just want to get that result again without really realizing what were the conditioning factors. So the understanding of greed that doesn't help the practice is a lesson that we will have to learn over and over and over and over again. Sorry?
When we make it a system, we have an expectation. Yes. It was not there when we got the first time.
Correct. The system will like what?
Yeah. Expectation.
So when we haven't learned any lesson thoroughly, we will come across it over and over. That's why you call the first book the Don't Look Down on the Dependents. They will laugh at you. He says we sort of kick the defilement out of the ring once and we think, wow, we're pretty good.
And it gets subtler. Yeah, in terms of like, initially it's quite gross, and you notice, oh yes, that got rid of it, that was quite, it feels like, oh, that was easy.
Mm.
But I've found that the greed gets subtler.
Yeah.
Like I, for instance,
it's more tricky, yes. You can't recognize it.
No, I didn't recognize that. Yeah. So I'm just going to be really mindful on this walk, but then when it didn't quite work out, it was like, you know, the greed was subtle. I hadn't realized that just trying to be mindful on the walk, I'd actually come from a greed perspective.
Correct. Yeah. It's very sly. It will come from all angles, and you know, when you recognize it at a gross level, it will come at a subtler level. When you recognize that, it'll come at a subtler level from a different level, different angle.
There was a monk
who had got into a good momentum. He came and said to the teacher, wow, he said, if it carries on like this, he says, I don't ever have to stop meditating. It's everything is going fine. Awareness is continuous, you know. And it feels effortless. He just has to put in minimal to just keep it going and so on. And then the next morning he came and said, I don't know what happened. I don't know how to practice anymore. It's all gone.
I don't know how to practice.
Something, something spoiled the moon and he doesn't know what.
อันนั้นพระองค์เนี่ยอาตมก็ก้องมาเนี่ยเปลี่ยนเสร็จมาจ้องก้องมาเนี่ยญาณรู้จักไปเนี่ยเปลี่ยนเสร็จแต่พอจ้องเอ๊ะแล้วนี่รู้อ่ะดีดีนะกูจําไม่รู้เนี่ยดิอาจารย์ตีลานี่กูเตียรู้ตานี่รู้ตึกอ่ะอสมาดิรู้ตะไปก่อนนี่ถ้าว่าเนี่ยไอ้ตัวน้าเลยน้าเลยแล้วดูล่ะอืมแล้วตลอดตะบ้อปอกแล้วดูมันไม่ป่ะเหรอเสียรู้เสร็จ
always check when you have a good experience check how was the mind meditating before that. Like, what did it do? What sort of attitude did it have? Check that. When it has a bad, when you have a bad meditation, also check. What did the mind do? What sort of attitude did it have? He says, when we learn from each of these things over and over again, he says, when we haven't learned, our meditation goes up and down, good, bad, good, bad, good, bad. He says, then when we learn, the thoughts become less and less high, and then if we really understand, it always feels how skillful we are at our meditation, you know, you can sort of gauge by how high and low you go. The less skillful you are, the more high, more low we go.
There's a sign, isn't there, that arrogance precedes the fall, or conceit precedes
right,
the fall.
Right, comes before a fall.
Yeah, right. In that case, it covers this situation.
Pride comes before a fall, but...
มาจ่าเนี่ยบ่เว้ยเนี่ยอาจารย์ครับผมนามเลยครับโอ้มาจ่าเอาสิเลยเอาสิลงโพอาจารย์ครับอาจารย์ครับอะยีจิตาติโหน้าเลยโหมั้ยโหอัธวะล่ะอัธมุบ่จ่องอาจารย์ติน่ะยีจิอาจารย์ติอยู่ตัวเพิ่นทําเลยครับ
Defilements always crave a result. They want to get something a certain way, but wisdom always looks at the means, not at the end. Wisdom looks at what conditions can be fulfilled. Looks for the causes, tries to fulfill the conditions.
So is it also fair to say wisdom is the looks at the process then?
Yes. Wisdom got process for jiga.
Yes, right.
Particularly when the understanding that causes that every cause has an effect, the understanding that if the conditions are fulfilled, if the causes are fulfilled, the effect cannot help but take place.
อันนี้เนี่ยอาจารย์เอ้าเปลี่ยนนี่อ่ะดูเนี่ยเปลี่ยวแล้วนิ้วๆตัวนี้ล่ะสาธุเปลี่ยนแล้วได้ตัวเตี้ยเนี่ยก็ว่าอีกกันเปลี่ยนแล้วอ้าวตัวเราตัวเพื่อนซึ่งน่ะนี่ล่ะเนาะเราก็บาตาด้วยไอ้คนน่ะก็ว่าเนี่ยเปลี่ยนไปแล้วตัวที่เนี่ยปูก้องเราก็พัดทําเหนียวอะไรเนี่ยปิ๊บๆจ้ะอืมถ้ามันกูเปลี่ยนเหรอรู้จริงๆตัวกูอย่างนี้อเมียนอยู่ประมาณน่ะโหมันเหรอตัวจะไม่เปลี่ยนเฉยๆลงมาเส้นมันแล้ว
everything, he seemed to hit a brick wall every couple of days, and the teacher would try to help him work through different techniques, you know, try it this way, try it that way. But everything he did, initially it would be really good, it would get really good, and then he would get really bored. And that's because it took a while to realize what sort of circle he was spinning. He's a perfectionist, and so after working simply at it, in the beginning he thinks of it as, I'm a beginner, so he's just doing it. And then after a while, when it gets really good, he thinks now it can get really much better. And then he starts thinking of how what it should be. And then he's impatient with how it is right then. Because He wants to get it right away. Yeah, he'd gone to many places to practice and all that as well.
Yeah,
he can't stop practicing meditation, but then he kept coming against this brick wall again and again. Then after he understood what, you know, what was in his way, then where he went from.
This expectation thing is so subtle. You don't realize that it's there sometimes.
My expectation that they will to have a human or Yes, for the long term meditator, this is the main enemy. Even in, you know, there is the what do you call it, the 10 contaminations of vipassana insight, and the first 9 are experiences that we have in vipassana practice, you know, like seeing light, feeling light,
understanding clearly,
all this sort of thing, all good experiences, all that are valid vipassana experiences. What makes them contaminations is when we attach to them. Mm-hmm. We give them greater meaning. Give them greater meaning or significance than they actually have.
I did some walking out today, some pointy pebbles on the path.
Mm-hmm.
And after some time I realized the sensation from the pointy pebble.
Yeah.
But must in the air. The pebble is on the ground, my foot is in the air.
Why are you still feeling?
So then I test, step on the pebbles. And it hurts straight away.
Mm-hmm.
I take the foot off the feet, the sensation is gone.
Yeah.
So the first time round, was it like a memory? Was I observing a memory? Or was I not being aware?
Mm-hmm.
Same thing happens with thoughts.
Yeah.
So if there's a little train of thought, by the time I observe it or be aware of it, it's not long.
Mm-hmm.
No, maybe not long on, but
yes.
It's actually...
Yes.
It's flicked through.
Correct.
So am I being aware in those situations?
Mm.
Or am I just a little bit behind?
Mm. The detail meter, to see the shell meter, soon it's... Yeah, he says possibly it's more like a memory thing. You know, you notice the thought and there's the memory left. And the same with taste, you know, sometimes the taste is gone, but we still have a memory of the taste. So the actual sensation, you know, like of the foot and the sharpness, he says that's a touching sensation, yes? But when you lifted the foot and then the mind was still thinking there was a sensation, you know, where when you were paying proper attention, you saw that there was no sensation when you lifted the foot. But previously, because the mind wasn't really looking, the memory of it was still there, and then you knew the memory of it, and that was the... So that's then a mind object, not a touching object. Yeah, that's a mind object.
Is it still a form of awareness?
Yeah,
of the mind
object? Yeah, although you didn't recognize it was a mind object, but there was awareness that there was yes. Yeah, sometimes we hear a sound and then it seems to still ring in our head, you know, things like that, yeah, to recognize.
Like in the traditional way of Vipassana, you know, you're supposed to say hearing, and things like that. After some time I realized, by the time you think hearing, it's gone.
Gone. Yeah. Yeah. You know, so you have that... Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
It's when we experience it directly that the object is truly there. After that, any label we put to it is
Another thing I want to ask is, like in the beginning traditional Vipassana practice, they say about intention.
Yeah.
Like, when you lift your foot and want to move it forward,
yeah,
to notice the intention,
yeah,
which is often said.
Yeah.
And now, like a lot of things happen without you really, like digestion happens.
Yeah.
Yes. You know, those things, I mean, from a scientific point of view, their brain has to send a message.
Yes.
For those things to happen, like for the hand to move, if you are paralyzed, the message doesn't go.
Correct.
So, is that the intention meant by the Buddha as Chetanaham Bhikkhave Kamma Vadami? You know, the Chetana, that mind is.
Just intention to move and so on, those chetanas are neutral.
Yes.
The chetana that causes karma are akusala and kusala chetanas.
Yeah.
Wholesome and unwholesome.
So
it's
like moving
a
foot.
The intention is the more like what the second one.
This is the you know, the intentions, what you're talking about, intentions, that arise, they are mental formations, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So for the intention to, when the intentions arise in the mind, they're just like an energy, an energy that it's a mental energy that gives rise to the wind element that will push that forward. So, those sort of intentions have no, there's no word spoken. It's not like a desire to do something where you think, I want to eat something. That's a spoken.
Not a karma forming intention.
Yes, not a karma forming intention.
I think this Vipassana teaches, or this way it's taught, I was taught really, you're really kind of looking for a thought of contemplation. I never found this for many years. I think it's not so that there's really an intention for every kind of movement.
No, it's just an urge. It's just a movement of the mind.
So there's not really a chaitana for all?
No.
For
yeah,
there's a lot of chaitanas continuously. Intention to be still also is there. So the energy is not only to move but also to remain.
Intention, I'm here.
Yes. So the intentions are always there. So
the guru mala appear.
Intention throughout the whole body, just to remain seated. The intention to be there, to stay there.
We
are more familiar with the intentions to move because the change gives us an indication that there was an intention, so it's more obvious. But we, you know, sometimes we sit in meditation, we can't get up. The small intention to get up is beginning, but the intention to remain seated is much stronger. So we find ourselves unable to bring ourselves out. So we can't see that energy that wants us to remain
seated.
So that intention to remain seated is still strong.
How can we use intention skillfully for our meditation?
How can we use them skillfully? Hey, intention, so long as we begin, you know, to see the mind more, you know, there are times when we will notice these functions of mind at work. This is just one of the functions of mind. There are four khandhas. Once you're skillful at recognizing mind, then you will recognize the different functions in the mind. That's all. Even if we were just watching movements, our bodily movements all the time, we will begin to notice the intentions that come with it as well. That's possible too. When the mind is still, it's easier to notice intentions, you know, like maybe you're walking and then you want to change the He says when we finish a sitting session and we are ready to get up, which part of the body moves first?
Body or mind?
Or mind.
Mm-hmm.
What starts the process of getting up?
The mind.
Which mind? What mind?
Intention.
And then the body, some part of the body moves. Which part of the body moves first?
The head. Your
gown. Like that?
Yeah.
He says it differs from person to person. He says you might want to try it out.
The body never stops moving. You could argue that the body never stops moving even when you're sitting.
Sorry?
The body never stops moving even when you're sitting. So you've never stopped moving.
Sometimes we sit still and then when we decide to get up, which part of the body moves towards
the body? Yeah, I understand that. I'm just saying that even when you're sitting still, you're still moving.
Some people open their eyes first. Some people open their eyes, but some people, he says, they sort of, you know, stay in that state. They like that kai, so they move a little bit here and there. They can't quite open their eyes. That sort of continuity he talks about, you know, he says, do we know in detail, you know, how we move from one state to the other? What happens first, then the next and if we are focused on one thing that we're paying attention to, then we don't really see the flow of the chain of activity. You know, we don't know what begins, what ends. When you enter your room, does your head go in first or your foot?
No.
You think the head?
If it's a breach case,
The foot goes first. If it's a normal, the head goes first.
Which case?
If you're born with the feet first. Wow, wow, wow. 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 Wow.
Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow.
Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow.
Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow. Wow.
Because I was like, right, where's the intention to move? And then there was this...
intention goes, you were just a... No, no, me, I don't... When you try too hard, you can't see. So just let it happen naturally.
I can still be down there.
he says he's sure that he knows if he wants to go to the toilet or
something.
Yeah, this continuity of awareness is just, it's only if we really, like, on top of the game that we'll notice these funny little things, When you're not interested in what you're going to know, but you're interested just to know, because then you just stay with what you might know next, yeah.
I've had the kind of the opposite thing that, you know, out of a meditation, anything to get up, and suddenly before I realized it, I've stood up.
They said, yeah, this happens like some yogis, you know, they... Because they've decided what to pay attention to, so like this yogi was paying attention to his head and his feet and your head. And it's tiring, you know. You're always going to the object and choosing... The direction is so far away, your feet are down there, your head is up here. You know, the mind is constantly, you know, directing the attention. And then if that yogi gets up, you know, they first pay attention to this, and by the time they've stood up, then they pay attention to the next one. So they miss a lot of things in between. So he said, hold on to the awareness. It's like he said today, you can move, change posture, do anything you want, but don't let go of the awareness. Mm-hmm. He said, hold on to it like death.
Death grip.
He says, it's only when we stay with the mind that we see the whole chain, you know. We plan to do something, we want to do it, we get up to do it, and when we change our plan, we know we've changed our plan before we get on to doing it, and that sort of thing. Everybody brushes their teeth here? Which hand do you brush with? Sorry. Both. We got a both here. When one hand is brushing, what is the other hand doing?
Last time, so we know.
Being in the present moment means knowing as much of your experience in the present moment as possible. yeah, from time to time. And knowing just one thing in the present moment is not called being in the present moment. He said if we practice like that, then every day is just a short, it's like a short moment, because there are so many things to know. And
that seems to be the great thing about walking meditation for me.
Is
that there are plenty of opportunities to know lots of things.
When the mind is busy and occupied, interested, then time passes.
This reminds me of one story about Jack Kornfield went to over there to practice in he was in Ajahn Chah's monastery, and he went to, what was your country again?
Sayadaw.
And he's, you know, like he was there for like, I don't know, 6 months, you know, silent retreat, and you know, like everything went well, and he's, you know, he's really excited, and you know, or you know, I think he was there for a year, and then he came back and he started explaining. He was really excited to Ajahn Chah, you know, like, oh yeah, it's great over there what they teach, you know, like in the. He could see every tiny muscle in his feet when he walked, and he was so mindful. And Ajahn Chah just said, "Great, more things to let go." So sometimes, you know, like people get attached to this kind of things too. You know, like they just keep on noting it instead of letting go.
Yeah. Who's it down there? Jack Kornfield, Mahasi Gabro, Ajahn Chah, and Chima. သူကအကြမ်းဖက်ရှာရအထွတ်မဟာစီးပွားရတယ်တော့ရန်ကောင်းတာပဲမလို့အသေးစိတ်အထွတ်ပြတ်သူအကောင်းဆုံးသိရဆိုအဲကောင်းတယ်လေအဲ့ဒါများများလှစ်ချဖို့သိရတာတချို့လူတွေအဲ့တိဖို့တွေများပြီးတော့ဟိုလှစ်ချဖို့မေ့နေတယ်
ဒါတော့
Yes that happens
ဒါပဲသိတာလေတော့လို့လို့လာပဲဘာလို့ဟို information ဆူပါမှာ
But you need
to ဆွဲဖို့မဟုတ်ဘူး information နေနေ
But we need to begin by knowing but not to hang on to itSo what Ajahn Chah meant by letting go is letting go of the sense of ego that I know so much. I have such a had such a good experience. But not to let go of the knowing. Yeah, you cannot let go of the knowing, but the attachment to how much I know and all that. His sense of owning that experience and stuff like that. Knowing, we don't have to let go of. Every moment it's gone.
Already gone.
So it's gone. Can't hang on to it. Yes, so it's not the knowing we have to let go of, it's the defilement.When we get self-satisfied with our practice, or conceit, or arrogance, and so on, with our own practice. But the more we can know, the better. We already lack knowing.
Yeah, his problem was he went and busted, wasn't it?
Sorry?
His problem in that story is that he went and busted about it.
We don't know what that... I mean, he was talking to his teacher, so of course you wouldn't tell. But, I mean, the teacher was pointing out that it's possible to have that sort of thing. It's possible for a yogi to become very attached to.
Or even excited about this.
Excitement brings some sort of attachment. There's a feeling of elation about it. Yes.
When the mind quietens down, Sayadaw said to ask questions. Can you say something?
Yes. What did you ask? He said. What do you want to know? If there's nothing we want to know, he said no question will come to mind.
No, like the questions are like, you know, what is the mind doing now?
Did you see what the mind was doing?
Yeah,
a bit.
He says we will, you know, whenever we ask a question, we will discover a little bit more.
Yeah, but not many. I mean, I ran out of questions. Yeah, that's why I want to know. What are the skillful questions to ask?
It must come from inside. This is nothing difficult. Just whatever you are experiencing or seeing, see what you feel curious about. What are you seeing? How are you observing?
What happens if the mind gets quite neutral, like that's what's been happening to me? Mm. I can observe the object, like if heat comes up on the body or an itch or something, I observe the object and then I try to observe the awareness. But then as I was observing the awareness of observing, the mind is just
neutral.
Quite neutral.
It
stays like that quite many times. So it's just like what this gentleman says, it becomes lazy sometimes, is it, you know? There is the neutral state. So again,
He says the mind's tendency is to like new things. It wants variety, it wants freshness, and otherwise it starts to feel lazy or bored. He says one thing to remember is that no moment is the same as the old. Every moment is fresh. And also to recognize that every moment is changing. When we recognize the changes in what we are experiencing, although it's neutral, it's changing, that also helps us to keep
the freshness.
If we think this is still happening. Mm-hmm. So the idea is that the same thing is still happening. Mm-hmm. That's the wrong view already. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we believe it's the same thing, but we're not observing properly and seeing that every moment is.
I actually start with the metta meditation, and then samatha meditation, and then when my mind is calm and settled, I start to ask questions. Is it all right?
Tamatali na nello promitar varo pro senye ma mego me re yala.
Chai le mo. Tamen mego ma tu information ya awareness a tu sou la ma mego me ya dama ho pa kose ma me ji ma.
Yeah. He says sometimes it's not worth asking a question yet. Sometimes you can just let yourself observe until you have enough information.
Awareness a deja su.
Awareness on its own is already gathering information. So when you have enough information that it prompts some sort of curiosity, then you can ask a question. Sometimes we don't have enough information. We haven't done much observing yet, and we just ask a question. He says, "Oh, you'll have a question." Is a question, question is always to the question is always to help us to investigate, you know, like a scientist, not to get an answer, but just help us research is like, you know, you don't know where the answer will come from, so there's many ways to look, right?
Yeah.
You know, the asking of the question, when it's some area that we are expert in, that we are skillful in already, what are you good at? You're good at cooking? Are you good at cooking?
You're asking me?
Yes.
Gardening.
Okay. And you are good at?
Cooking.
Okay. So whatever you're good at, he says, when you're doing that work, questions come naturally to your mind. Do they not? How can I do this better? When it tastes like this, how can I fix it? You know, whenever something new comes up, the questions come because you have enough knowledge about it to ask an intelligent question. Yes? And that's the way it is in meditation. So first we need to have some body of knowledge so that we have enough I don't know what word to use, to ask a question about Prabhupada.
Background,
yes. And sometimes just from listening to everyone, reading the Dharma and all sorts of things, he said sometimes we become curious about something. The Buddha asked questions, is the rupa atta or natta, stuff like that. Not for us to ask right now, I think. Examples.
I ask question about body pain. So if I have a pain somewhere, I just ask why, what is it, or something like that.
For what?
Do you ask what are you feeling?
Yeah.
And what?
And after some time it goes somewhere else. And then,
Yeah, just keep investigating, watching, investigating, asking. He says there's also probably the pressure when we're meditating during the day. We think, oh, we're going to go to the interview and then what shall I talk about? Let me look at this more closely so I can ask something. That sort of pressure,
Sometimes we can generate particular states of mind. Let's say like Kapha Vihara, Nekita.
Yeah.
How far is it useful?
Tikaniko, Vimas Rodiali, Varumaru, Kwame Alu Yale. But no. The Tong will live. It's useful for calming the mind, gladdening the mind.
Preparing
it, yes. So primarily it stills some of the defilements. Yes, preparing the mind. Makes the wholesome qualities of mind stronger so that the defilements will be less, yeah.
But it's not enough to just do that, is it? Like, I mean,
it's preparing the mind.
It's just preparing the mind. Yeah. But if we were to just practice metta and not actually look at what's going on.
You can make the metta, the mind that feels metta, an object of your awareness.
Yeah.
Is there true metta? How much metta is there? Yeah.
So if I was practicing metta and couldn't feel metta because I was angry with the person, say, to notice that too? To notice the...
Well, metta or shudra. In those sort of cases, then probably better to watch the anger, understand the anger, and not just try to blindly send metta. So although consciously we try to generate metta, we're unable to because subconsciously there's so much, or maybe not even so subconsciously, you know, there's a lot of dosa that's that you're not able to still with the cultivation of metta meditation, you know. Sometimes it can cause a conflict. So not to try to have metta if there's real anger, just...
So that process, the process that I've gone through with metta is, you know, working with the neutral and someone you feel strong, and someone you feel good about, and then neutral, and then the aversion. But if you get to the aversion, the aversive person, and
you still can't do it. In cases like that, you can actually just look at the anger.
Yeah.
Not think about the person and so on, but anger is a feeling. Look at the feeling only, focus on that, and as you watch it continuously and you're not thinking, the feeling can subside. And then when there's less of a feeling of anger, then you can see what effect it has. You will see how it's when we continue to think the thoughts that generate the anger that the anger remains, and when we're not thinking, which is what the focusing is about, and not thinking. When the mind is doing enough work that it's not thinking the thoughts that are generating the anger will definitely subside because there is not the generating cause. So the condition, so we can understand this relationship and use it. Sometimes we don't have the power to make the mind do more work than the power the anger has to think about. What it's angry about.
Sadness is
if we have developed a practice of focusing on one object continuously, there is a power that builds up. We have the ability to focus on one thing and build up a lot of energy that way in the mind. He says then when you take that kind of ability and you focus that energy onto any other object like anger or pain or something, then it can immediately cause that thing to subside. Because that mind, the mind that focuses is so much more powerful than the others, you build that energy from your practice. When he was practicing in lay life, so long as he wasn't doing something actively, he kept his mind's attention on one object only. Never let his mind be free. Never let his mind be idle. Always kept it stuck on some object and to be aware of. He used to play like that, put his five fingers together, just observe the touching points
alternately.
If he just kept his attention on the thumb, then slowly the sensation between the thumbs would become very obvious, and the other four sensations would fade from his view. Yes, and when he was satisfied, he would switch fingers, maybe to the index finger, and so it became the most powerful. When he went to weddings, when he went to attend weddings, they would always have in Burma, they have live bands during the wedding, and he would listen to each instrument one at a time as an object to just listening to the lead guitar, and then that becomes very obvious, and everything goes to the bass. You're hearing a whole orchestra, but he just chooses one, and then to practice that the power of the focusing. For him, he didn't dare to leave the mind alone because it would get depressed. So he had to. At that time, his wisdom wasn't very strong. That his vipassana insight wasn't very strong. There was no wisdom that relieved him from his depression. So he used samatha to still the mind, to still the defilements. So there was no understanding. So he used the work he understood. He just kept the mind busy. He always thought, how can I make the mind more peaceful? How can I make the mind still?
Yeah.
He could practice with seeing, with hearing, everything he would use.
Now don't be swam water and water all over here.
He used a big inhaler. Do you remember? You would smell it too. Because it's such a if his mind would start getting agitated, he'd just stick the inhaler in his mouth. Maybe the mind is with it. That's it.
Yeah.
Many, many ways to use it. Once he began to understand, once the jnana started arising and he understood more, and that gave him relief from the depression, yes, he didn't have to focus so much anymore. He says when the wisdom was growing, then things like this happened, like something made him angry, then he would look at the anger. He would look at the anger, and because of all the power he had built up, when he looked at the anger will subside. When the anger is gone, he will look at the object again. Now there's no anger, but it's the same object. Then he sees a completely different view. And that's how he understands the relationship between mind and object. And then the mind begins to understand it is possible to think of an object in this way. It is possible to regard an object in this way, not just through anger, but from a different perspective, because it remembers that it can apply it in future. Naturally, when the mind is angry, it just sees negatively. It just sees the situation negatively. When there's no longer anger, the pieces naturally positive points of view can be seen. Reasonable thoughts are possible. It's possible to forgive. All this becomes possible when the mind is not angry. So when the mind state of mind changes, then the thoughts change. So these are principles that he learned. These concepts he began to learn from his own experience. That if he does this, it relieves the mind in this way. If he thinks in this way, it relieves the mind in that way, Like when he is agitated and has aversion, pain is experienced in a certain way. When there's no more aversion, the same pain is experienced in a completely different way.
Question about flies. I was just like going for walks. I tried without a fly in it. I'm trying to be patient with them.
Observe, feel.
Not trying to be thin.
Trying to be what is not is harder. Yeah. Recognize what it is easier. Mm-hmm. Takes less effort. It is more natural. You don't have to do anything, you just have to know. The mind is impatient, it doesn't like this, it wants to push it away.
And finally I've decided it's much easier to go with the fly net.
Now so feel like that.
About the fly. So the fly the other day taught me delusion, greed and aversion all in one go, from the time it took from taking off from one part of the face, landing in my nose. Although experientially I with regards to anger as well, although I understand although experientially I have experience looking at anger or looking at aversion and seeing it subside, I don't understand it. So I've experienced it, but I don't understand it. So it makes the whole, that whole concept kind of difficult. And the other difficult thing that happened to me today was that I realized that although I thought I understood compassion, I don't think I've ever experienced real compassion, because however deeply I looked, I saw dosa. Really, like, maybe just a... just like a fraction of it. So then it made me think, maybe I just I don't understand that either. So I don't understand those compassion at all. Zero. I have zero understanding of it now. Like, I feel like I've never had it. And although I understand how you can reduce those defilements, I don't really understand why they would reduce by looking at them. So it's left me kind of just generally confused.
But quite peaceful.
He says, with reference to
observing defilements, any defilements or anger, watching them.
Did you
all hear the pendulum story?
No.
It was the morning. Nobody knows the pendulum story. Everybody looks blank. So he says, it takes many, many observations of defilements, watching them subside and so on, before understanding arises. He did a lot before understanding began to rise, maybe 2 years worth of continuous, So the pendulum story, some of you may have read about it in the book. The pendulum story describes a little bit about investigation, not conscious investigation. It's investigation that the mind did on its own naturally. And it discovered something. When he was young, his teacher used to come into the Dharma hall and give little meditation reminders. And he liked it when his teacher came in to give these little reminders. His teacher's voice is very soft. Where he sat, his teacher sat slightly to the left of the room. And one day, one of these times, his teacher came in and was speaking, and he was trying to listen. And he was feeling very peaceful. And then on the right side, there's a door onto the road, and somebody started to make a lot of noise. And immediately, a huge ball of anger rose inside him. And he was shocked. He was like, how can it... And this question that his mind asked, how can it be so peaceful and then suddenly become so angry? Because of that, his mind seemed to step away to look at what was happening. And his mind saw his attention going to the left, trying to listen, not being able to hear. And then the attention running to the right, getting angry with the noise, complaining, and then coming to the center and seeing this huge ball of anger grow, and then going to the left, and then to the right, and then back to the center and grow. And after it went back and forth like this about 3 times, he said, suddenly it hit him. The realization hit that because of attachment to this, there is anger towards the other, which is
blocking this.
So not wanting this sound makes the mind not want the other sound, and that is causing anger. So the lobha causes dosa. And that understanding, suddenly the anger is gone because of the understanding. And at that point, and at that point, the mind understood, and it stopped attaching to the sound of his teacher's voice, stopped being averse to the noise happening outside. Then, you know, he said it just happened naturally. It's not that he willed it or thought about it. And then the mind came back to the center and remained aware of the peacefulness that had come back. So you see how the mind saw everything, the activity of the mind going back and forth, the feeling in the mind, the anger, the talking in the mind, the thoughts, the sensations, the heat and all that sort of thing. So everything was known, and then a picture, you know, something was understood. Initially, when he was attached to the sound of what his teacher was saying, probably the awareness was not so good. But once he became interested to see what was happening, because why didn't he becomes so angry so suddenly, then the mind began to see the whole picture much more. So, yeah. An example of how a question makes the mind investigate more naturally, you know, more.
Yeah.
Why is so much suffering in the middle of so much peace? But it's not a conscious thought process. Yeah. So if we just cultivate it, eventually just, you know, it'll become part of our practice. Yeah.
So this kind of investigative process, I reflect on these kinds of things that you were thinking about the anger, for example, not in the meditation. Because that is a big thinking process going on there. So I get what he's saying, but I would be doing that kind of reflection, what appears to me to be reflection.
He didn't do any reflection at that time. This sort of thing happens quite organically, where he asked a question, the rest of it was just seen. It's not that he consciously thought, oh, this is, I'm trying to listen to the teacher and the mind is complaining. There was no more of this conscious awareness that we do to practice. The practice at that point just took its own
process.
I'm thinking more even in the stories that Sayadaw is telling us about.
Yes.
Not just that story of the pendulum.
Yeah.
I mean, the understanding that
we have.
There's another thing he understood out of that episode. He understood that the degree to which we attach to an object is the degree to how much is the degree to how angry we will be in the opposite situation.
45 degree attach to the story. 45 degree angry with. But
he
had a down there.
He said, no Buddha can stop that.
No. 90 degree sway, eh? 90 degree suffering, I don't know. 180 sway,
So because of that episode and what he understood from there, he says every time he felt he recognized attachment in himself to something, it was like a warning to him that that's how angry he could become. If he doesn't get that thing that he's attached to, that much anger is going to come as well. So that was like a warning to him to watch out. So he couldn't allow himself to get too attached to anything because this. Because he understood.
So he asked only one question.
The mind asked it.
Yeah.
At that point, it wasn't
the mind question.
It was just, the mind just did it all by itself. It was just the right conditions at the right time. He says, while he was practicing, of course, yes, he asked questions in his practice previously. You know, he asked questions, he tried to investigate. But yes, at some point it comes to fruition. One day there's a situation, the mind asks a question naturally and finds the answer. So, he says the first time his Yara did that was ask him why there's rising falling. And he said he could think of that theoretically because I'm breathing. So his Yara he knew that experientially, that because he breathes there's rising falling. And then asked him, so why is there breathing? And then he couldn't answer it wasn't in his experience. He didn't know. He tried to give him many answers out of the top of his head. His teacher accepted. He said, this is natural because we want to live.
But that experience understand.
But it's not experiential understanding. His teacher didn't accept. So he went and he started trying. It took him a week. He watched and looked and tried to find the answer. He couldn't find the answer. And finally he said, okay, never mind, 1 week. And then he says, as he was breathing, something came to him. That was the wanting to breathe. He saw it so clearly. So 1 week of investment. That because there is the desire to breathe, there is breathing happening.
I would like to ask a question. Sometimes we have to face some defilements which are difficult to bear. We work with it for a long time. Until we even give up, it gets so strong we give up. Usually the next day or usually after that it turns around. And I was wondering,
it becomes better.
Was wondering, sometimes it just disappears.
Yeah.
And I was wondering, is this the nature of defilement that before it's overcome it gets very strong? Or is it just the abandonment of the battle? The abandonment of the fighting
He says you need to be careful of your attitude towards defilement.
Yeah.
If you have a judgment that it's a difficult defilement or it's
yeah,
So if there's any resistance, it always makes it seem to stick around longer or become worse. He says, whenever we find difficulty in meditation, he says, very commonly, difficulty in meditation is experienced because we are not experiencing how we would like it to be.
And we don't want to.
And there's also, we need to consider the power of the defilement that's being experienced and the power of our own practice. How strong our
sati-samadhi.
How sustained is our sati-samadhi? How much have we been practicing, you know, and all that. We need to consider the balance of the powers. He says, it can be that when the defilement is very strong and the power of the sati-samadhi is not that strong, then we will find it difficult going as well. He says, when the enemy is very strong, when the defilement is very strong, and we are weak, he says, sometimes then a direct battle is not possible, we won't win. He says, then we have to use our intelligence. We have to run around him, poke him from different sides, yeah, try to topple him, yeah, tickle him. One of the tricks, he says, is to use a neutral object. You know the defilement is there, what you don't like or what you have difficulty with is there. Take a neutral object to build sati and samadhi. And when you, yes, something else. And when you feel the sati samadhi getting stronger, turn back and look at what was difficult. He said, just one way. And then he said, you can come back. If it gets stronger, come back to the neutral object. And you can go back and forth until you are stronger than
that.
He says, so long as your sati samadhi works continuously, eventually that defilement
will be
weaker. He says, if your sati samadhi is 70%, it's only 30% power. He says, then surely you can turn all your power to it and it will just he says we learn a lot of this from work itself, you know, the work of the meditation or even our normal work, the kind of skills we bring to our work, we must bring to meditation, the same intelligence. He says, and there is no discounting the value of experience in the sense of practice. The more we practice, the more experiences we'll have, the more we'll have to fall back on the lessons we've learned, and the more skill, you know, the more we'll understand how to do it.
Yes. I still couldn't find out the answer why I feel hot and sweating, because just after I feel hot and sweating, I feel very uncomfortable, and then my mind will not be that stable, so I will not be able to get an answer for that. I don't know
Do your samatha first. When you have some stability of mind from the samatha, come to the vipassana.
If the mind is
not in the right mood, you cannot use some borrowed wisdom to write the attitude, then this is just use samatha meditation to still the mind. When you're unable to use right attitude, then you have to come back. Yes. If you're able to think about it and correct your attitude, then you can just go straight into it. But if you're thinking about it, you're not able to reflect in a way that can correct the attitude, then go back to do some samatha to
still.
Some people, they just think about it in the right way. And it feels, instantly they feel better. They're able to observe and investigate. But some people cannot. Then you have to, like, you know, look, use the neutral object sometimes. If observing an object causes agitation in the mind, don't look at that object directly anymore. Then you have to observe the agitation. You have to correct the, you have to adjust the mood of the mind. So there's two ways you can adjust the mood of the mind. You can adjust it by thinking right thinking, right thought, right view. If that's not possible, then samatha.
I want to go back one step to what you were talking about before that. I've been hearing Sayadaw talk about intelligence and wisdom. I'm thinking creative and inventive.
Creative and inventive, correct.
Yes, and that gives me a different feeling. I think that's what I need to do often, is to open my mind to be creative and inventive, because I'm presented with something like my anxiety, and it's like I've only got one approach to it, which doesn't work.
Yeah. You need to.
Well,
creative and inventive people, ko sinzam, pero toh ikaw le, pero ko ni baunzong ko shaya me sinzam tweeto, baunzong ko tweet ko shaya ma, pero tuwa gumada tu tweet. Not to blindly just use one thing, but to root around.
It also automatically gives me a sense of increased energy because interest is being there. We
limit ourselves to the few things that the teacher tells us sometimes. And actually, these are just pointers. We must use our own wisdom to. How do I explain it? I use so many words, I
myself.
He says, when we are in real difficulty, necessity is the mother of invention.
Yes. Yes. I have a question for Sayadaw. In what we're talking about, I'm thinking of the word reflection, a word I used before. Mm-hmm. Can he just talk to me about how he connects the idea of meditation and what we do in meditation with what I think is reflection, which is to think about what we're doing in a separate place, if you like, but maybe that's just me putting... So I'm sensing some connection between the two in the way he talks. And I think I'm just after some clarity because I really think reflection is a very powerful thing. And I'm just wanting some discussion, some elaboration from his point of view about how he sees those two being related and distinct and so on. Is that...
Makes sense.
Okay, makes sense, yes.
When you talk about reflection, you said you reflect away from this...
I reflect on practice, but I also reflect in practice.
Yes.
Okay, so I do both. While you're in the moment, you reflect.
And away from it.
And also away from it. Yes. It's generally considered what happens, theoretically. Yeah. But I'm wondering, if he wouldn't mind talking about...
Sure. Yeah, I think he talks about it all the time, actually.
Yes, I'm thinking that too, and I'm just wanting to clarify.
Reflections around...
Mm.
He said he mentioned today. He said, "What are you sitting and doing?" Right? He asked everyone.
Yeah.
What are we sitting and doing?
Yeah, I think probably in Western way.
He says it's, you know, we get into this doing and not reflecting on what we're doing, how we're doing it, and so on. Yeah.
Yeah, I think for me it was just that I was getting confused because in my upbringing, if you like, or where I've come from, the reflection thing is a big thing.
Uh-huh.
Perhaps as much as meditation is in the East, a thing of, oh, just for me. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah.
And yet I think some of what he talks about for me is about reflection in action.
Yes.
It's just me wanting to clarify. If he says that, what he just said now,
yes.
I'm actually settled about that.
Yeah.
Because I'm thinking, okay, is there another whole thing?
A lot of what he's talking about, you know, is about reflection. He says,
what attitude
are you practicing with?
Fabulous.
You're supposed to reflect, right?
Yeah, fabulous.
Yeah,
he said earlier,
when you have good practice, you know, think about what conditions are
with.
When you have bad practice, what conditions are with.
Yeah, it's just me.
He said,
Rahula said.
The Buddha taught his son and said, before you speak, reflect.
Yeah.
When you're speaking, reflect.
Yeah.
And after you've spoken, reflect.
Okay. That's really great to know.
That's great.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Okay.
Shadow
wants us to think and meditate, not just blindly meditate.
Aware, not blindly.
I have avoided using the word intelligent a long time because it makes people think the opposite. But Shadow says, please use awareness intelligently. Be aware intelligently. So he's saying, use your own noodles. You know, it's not just following his instructions. Expand on it. Innovate on it. You know?
Sometimes
he says, and also there's this huge thing about language. How we understand language.
Yeah, that's
like he used to use the word try, and this yogi's experience got him to almost stop using the word try, practically 100%. He said, try to do this, try to do that. It gave her the sense that she wasn't trying. Made her think she wasn't trying.
She won't try.
She put in so much effort. She had so much tension until he got what was happening to her, and then he just didn't dare to say try anymore to her. He's like, "You're doing enough." It's like, no, because she worked really hard, you know. But she did recognize he was just saying continue, you know. Yeah.
In Burmese,
it just means carry on the effort, you know. Carry on the same way.
Yeah, just at the risk of beating a horse here,
beating
this to death from my point of view.
Okay.
I'm entirely new to this. I've only just entered into it. And so, okay, you bring all this, but you kind of think that you don't know anything. It's the usual thing when you just start something new, you know, that you don't know anything.
Yeah.
Best to think that.
Yes.
You know, then you don't get slapped around too much.
Correct.
And yet, you know, it seems like, well, I do know a little bit.
It seems very familiar to you.
Let's not get too carried away.
Okay.
But anyway, the reflection thing helps me, that's all I need.
Okay.
Because that's a big part of what I do already, so thank you.
He says the only thing to watch out for is when reflection becomes discursive thinking, they call it.
Yes.
When it becomes flogging and then posture.
Recursive is what you want.
So it's there is limits to everything.
Yeah.
There is too much of anything. So wisdom will tell us when it's too much. When you begin to realize this is too much or that's too little, then you
Did you all understand that?
He says if we want to know what the right tuning is, we have to listen to it continuously, not just turning one way and the other, and yeah. We have to watch continuously.
No, no, no.
He said that's what we tend to do in meditation. Turn it up, turn it down. You don't sort of tune it. We're not skillful at meditation. Of course we need to tune. We're all going to be too much or too little. He says, so keep an eye on what we're doing and check to see whether it's sounding like he's seen yogis who are tense up to their tense to the hill, don't even realize that they are causing the tension. And when they are told to relax, they go to sleep. They don't have too much or too little. Can
happen.
He says the Vietnamese come to the center and you know they learn from him and all, and then they go back home and they teach. And the main thing they brought back was relax. But they didn't teach them about interest, keeping up the practice. So everybody is sleeping. It's like making a
lime juice.
You have to have some sour, some sweet, some salt to get the nice balance. Because he doesn't want us to use too much energy to focus, because it creates tension. He wants people to balance interest, relaxing, and interest, because interest brings virya naturally without our
interest.
There's more wisdom. Quite difficult to explain. He says if he tells people to just focus, very easy. All of us are really good at it. He says if he says not enough effort, people will just go all the way. Very easy for us to do that. Because we're very, very skillful at using our defilements to concentrate, anger to concentrate. We like something, our mind is fully absorbed in it. He says, girl passes by, our concentration is really good. Focusing, concentrating is so natural for the defilements. When we're angry also, we're stuck on that object, can't get our mind off moving. But when he says, don't focus, use wisdom and interest, then if we don't understand what that means, then like hard to get around to it. So what he's trying to do is program all of you.
Program.
This programming is also a part of the wisdom bit of the practice, right? Mm-hmm. Getting the right information.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. With the program, then we can use the application software.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. There are too many programs, they kind of conflict with each other.
Okay.
Thank you.